Well.
Look what we got here, man.
Look, hey, do you see this? The king himself, Mr. Mark Morrison.
King of my own court, that's for sure.
Mister, don't tell me what to do. Man, we are so happy to have you in a world. Alexei, let's give Mark Morrison a round of applause. How are you, sir?
I am doing well, young man. Yourself?
I'm doing great. I love that background. That's literally how it looks where you're at, right?
That's literally my background. And you see, I'm feeding my deer in the morning. So
okay.
But it stops in April because they'll eat all my roses. So
does the deer have a name?
Stop eating my roses. That's what I'm going to call them in April. Yeah.
Little ass hat. I see.
Exactly. Exactly.
Today's episode is brought to you by our sponsor, Bop Karaoke. Looking for a new way to turn up the fun? Try Bop Karaoke, the most entertaining karaoke gaming app. With Bop Karaoke, you're not just singing, you're playing a game. Choose from country, pop, R&B, or hip-hop. Set your level of difficulty and let the fun begin. With gamified features, scoring, and leaderboards, you can compete with friends or just enjoy the spotlight solo. The best part? You can record and share your bops or keep them just for yourself. Whether you're a shower singer or a stage-ready performer, Bop Karaoke makes every note memorable. Ready to record yours? Head to bopkaraoke.com or search for Bop Karaoke in your app store. Let's make your next karaoke session one to remember. Download Bop Karaoke today.
Well, Mark, we're going to get into it. We've got a bunch of listeners on here, and this is a real treat. I want you to just give us your background, but as of recent, and I can't believe this, you just retired after doing 46 years in the cardiology space.
I did.
Cheers to you, sir.
Thank you. And it's been quite an adventure, that's for sure. You know, you think back and it's like, wow. I was a little newbie X-ray guy. There's blood. I'm like, holy smokes. And, you know, you graduate through the years. And the one thing I'll tell you, consistent learning day by day by day, always something new. And for somebody, anybody, to think they've been around, they know it all, it's a very humbling experience to go, maybe not. Mm-hmm. You know, you just have to continue to learn. 46 years, I still learn something, right? So it's, wow. Yeah,
we'll have to put a pin in that because a lot of people like you could become crotchety old men and women who
doesn't mean I'm not a crotchety old man.
They could become crotchety and they're like, I've been doing this. I want to know this. But before we go there,
sure.
Take us back. How did you get into the space?
So it's an interesting story. I graduated high school. And I'm going to go way back to zero,
yeah.
Right? Graduated high school, was landscaping
From what high school and what town? Tell us where you're
Kirtland
from.
Kirtland High School, Northeast Ohio, east side of Cleveland, small high school, you know, graduated 122. Mm-hmm. Worked for 3 weeks as a landscaper, not knowing what I wanted to do. I kind of liked the X-ray thing.
Okay.
Long story short, I went to the hospital, Euclid Hospital in east side of Cleveland here. And looked at it. They said, well, thanks for coming in, but we have 6 people already for this year. And I'm going
to
tell you.
To be an X-ray tech?
To be an X-ray tech. So okay. X-ray school, right? I went back and my grandfather, no, this is bless his heart. My grandfather knew the president of the hospital. Walked up to him for a few minutes. We said, okay, well, unfortunately, can't get in. Walked down the hallway and the X-ray instructor saw me. He goes, oh, I'm glad I caught you. We have an extra space.
A miraculously
The angel
extra
sang
space.
Something.
Yeah.
Very, very grateful. And turns out I started X-ray school 2 weeks later. Was the student of the year, et cetera, et cetera. Went very well. Started working and then played in the cath lab during my rotation. And I really thought it was pretty neat to look at. And I wanted to be that guy. So I became the cath lab guy, then the helper, if you will, in cath lab. Then I ran the cath lab. And then I moved to the Cleveland Clinic, you know, and stepped up pretty big time at the clinic. Turned out to be like, tech of the year at the clinic, awarded by the physicians. Got it every 2 years, every other year. And then, and moved into the industry in 2002, clinical for a long time. Moved up to, a rep. And ironically, people are like, what'd you do different? So from a clinical to a rep, if you will, mm-hmm. right? I didn't change a thing.
No.
Because I sell clinically. I don't sell on the salesman idea. I don't do that. I sell
plus,
on clinical.
Plus you're a talker already.
I try to be a little talker, right?
A little chatty Cathy.
But if you talk about the right things, it works well. You know what I mean? So that has all worked out well, and that's led me to today. That's where I'm at. So,
can we go back for just a second? I want to tell me more, because when you went to X-ray tech school yeah. or program, that was just like, that was everything. There's like broken bones and all sorts of stuff. Like, talk me through that transition. When did you decide, oh, I see that's interventional cardiology or, you know, yep. intravessel imaging. That's the where I want to go.
Yeah. So I thought, you know, cause going to radiology tech school,
yeah.
you look at X-rays, you look mm-hmm. at ultrasound, CAT scan.
Mm-hmm.
CAT scan was huge then. Now CAT scan is not as big as MRI. We didn't have mm-hmm. MRI when I started. So you have multiple facets of X-ray and radiology. And again, the vascular portion of it really intrigued me.
Mm-hmm.
Right. I found more use for what I did in that procedure. Mm-hmm. You know, the better I was scrubbing, taking pictures, et cetera. It behooved me and it gave me more fulfillment than sitting at a computer, MRI, CT, whatever it was.
Yeah.
I appreciate it. It's needed. I just didn't trick my trigger as it did other people. So I moved to the vascular space and excelled by asking a million questions.
Yeah.
Finding out why and what's, right? Because what's easy, why is not so easy.
Right.
Right. Understand what to do is pretty straightforward, but why you do something, that's the real key for me. And what, you know.
Was there someone on the other side when you were working in the lab, right?
Mm.
Was there someone on the other side that was in industry that you saw or they motivated you or you were like, hey, that's, I could go over to the dark side, as we say.
Mm. Yeah. There was a couple salespeople that, intrigued me and looked at me and said, you know, you're pretty good at what you do. You'd be great in industry. I'm like, okay, whatever industry is. Yeah. Right. Early on in the late 70s, early 80s, didn't know what industry was. Uh-huh. And ironically, a guy named John Simpson, interventional cardiologist, famous, was a fellow and then became, I mean, Berklow's, he made Fox Hollow, he made devices.
Mm-hmm.
Each one sold for a minimum $40 million, I believe. Some mm-hmm. crazy thing, right? But
yeah.
super inventor. And he offered me a job. In 1988.
Mm.
And I said, no thanks. Cause I was the dad, football coach, baseball coach. I had an 8 and 10 year old. And I was like, you know what?
You had a family.
These are great years. And I jokingly say, you know, I probably gave it up for $1 million.
Mm-hmm.
Probably gave it up for $1 million, but
any regrets on that decision?
Zero. No, uh-huh. no. I can't live my life. Shoulda, coulda, woulda, you know?
Well, you have
your kids wouldn't be coming over for Christmas, but you'd be like, we got a crap ton of money.
Yeah, exactly right. So a different animal and, you know, very grateful, appreciate the opportunities. And, but it gave me direction for something to work towards
mm-hmm.
since I didn't take that job offer
right.
back when I probably shouldn't have, but then I took job offer when I thought it was appropriate, when I was at the end of my interventional cardiology tech mm-hmm. world.
Okay.
I got myself to, I'm like, I'm bored. Mm. I'm teaching fellows more stuff than they know, mm-hmm. right? Just on experience. And I said, it's time for me to do something different. And, I think I jumped at the right time and it's all been very blessed and great career from that point forward.
What was that transition hard for you? Like going from there into industry? How did that yeah. feel at the time?
Yeah, it's very eye opening because mm-hmm. you're like, oh, I've done this. That's not your job anymore.
Mm.
I have to add a different value that no one teaches you.
Right.
Or it's not the commonplace. Let me say that way. Right. And like,
yeah.
no one teaches you. So here's the easiest way for me to put this. When I was a field trainer, people come visit me, you know, we're out with me for 2 or 3 days. They're like,
you do all the work.
You know everybody. I said, well, that's part of my job is to know everybody.
Uh-huh. But right.
you'd sit with me for a day and I'd say, hey, Chris, Alexi, welcome. How's the wife, family, kids, et cetera, et cetera? I said, mm-hmm. no, I'm going to three things I'm going to tell you. They don't want you here. Mm-hmm. They don't need you here. Mm-hmm. Now go create a value. And mm-hmm. you're like, what?
Mm-hmm.
That's the dead honest truth. You have to create your value. Oh, and by the way, there's three other companies trying to do the same thing you're
same
doing.
Same thing.
So why would I work with you? Makes you look internal and go, I have to be a difference maker somewhere, somehow. Now, there's not a book. There's millions of books that say how to do this. But in your own world, you have to be that person and figure out what it is that separates you or keeps you just run-of-the-mill with everybody else. I need to elevate it?
That's Oscar Gold right there.
That is.
I mean, creating that. And it's one of these questions that you, when you first hear it, you don't have the answer for.
No.
Right? You're like, how do I create value? I'm in here. I'm wearing my corporate scrubs.
Sure.
I've got my product.
Yeah.
Right? I supposedly know what I'm doing.
12,000 heart casts.
Right.
Or whatever your procedure is. I'm seasoned. I've done all this.
Mm-hmm.
They're like, yeah, thanks. It doesn't matter. You don't work here. Oh. Right?
Forgot
that's the other
that.
Thing I always tell people when I train. It's a privilege to be here.
Mm-hmm.
You're a visitor. You own nothing whatsoever here.
Yeah.
Act appropriate.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Always good stuff, you know?
I would say that your gut has, I mean, let's talk about gut decisions and looking back in regrets. I know there's another big life decision that you passed on where maybe we wouldn't have been able to call you Mr. Mark. We might have had mm-hmm. to call you Dr. Mark. Tell me about that.
Yeah, I was 19 years old and really doing well in the cath lab. And the physician looked at me and, you know, he said, come back in the office. I'm going to talk to you a minute. I said, yeah. I'm like, oh, what did I do wrong?
Mm-hmm.
He said, you are doing exceptionally well here. You seem to be a step forward in thinking and seeing what's happening.
Mm-hmm.
You, when you assist me, you are like me. You're doing things I'm thinking before mm-hmm. I think of them. He said, you know what? You would make an outstanding physician. I would offer to pay for your med school. If you're interested.
Wow.
Ah, boy, I was floored, totally humbled. But the one thing, I had a bad family situation. I was the breadwinner for mom and two younger brothers,
mm-hmm.
bad divorce, et cetera, et cetera. But,
yep. mm-hmm.
you know, and at that point, I couldn't see myself leaving them as was.
Mm.
Mm-hmm.
So I bit the bullet. And I stayed, did not take med school offer. Mm. In hindsight, that was a one-time offer. Right. 3 years later, it wasn't like, you know, hey, it's still standing. Mm-hmm. So, you know what? And to your point, Chris, shoulda, coulda, woulda.
Right.
Maybe I should have. But
yeah, but from my standpoint, and this is my belief. I have a belief already, but I'm going to ask you the question. Do you think that's played a role in your ability to kind of puppeteer these fellows and physicians like you do? You seem to have a gift as a Pied Piper, if you will. Does that play a role in it?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, way, way back here, my mind is like, that could have been me,
mm-hmm.
right? And I know what's in me. I would have made a great physician
mm-hmm.
oh, yeah.
seeing what I've seen over the years.
Yeah.
No, and it's not to say look at me and pat myself on the back and all.
Mm-hmm.
It's all of us have a passion somewhere, right?
Right.
We have a passion. I know it's in here.
Mm-hmm.
I know what I would have been. I would have worked hard. I would have made it the appropriate lifestyle choice for me.
Right.
Right. And I think that's what drives me now or drove me for the years to be on top of the game. For me, and I'm sure you and when you played football and you know, whatever your passions are,
mm-hmm.
if you're not top notch in your passions, then they're not really a passion. Right? I mean.
Man, he dropping heat, Alexei.
I couldn't live without being the best.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Or and striving to be the best. Maybe not, but working to constantly up my game.
And what's funny is that you're the prototype of what.
Mm.
Big Pharma and Big Med Device have always tried to look for, but they could never get the combination right. because at first, you know, historically, they wanted to find people who've either dropped out of med school or didn't really cut the mustard. And we're going to put it, we're going to put them in scrubs. We're going to send them into the hospital, but it didn't work.
Mm-mm. Doesn't always flip.
Right. It didn't
that
work.
Doesn't
and
always.
Yeah. Sure. And then they had to switch it and said, okay, we got to teach, some athletes, if you will, athletes and nice looking men and women. We got to teach them how to communicate with these physicians and go in. But originally you were the prototype.
Mm-hmm.
But it didn't work. And you know, we all know how social styles and different things like that work. But yeah, it's deep that you say that, because a lot of people, I think that knowing you now, I can kind of see where that passion comes from, because you really have a respect for the white coat. And I think a lot of people sometimes, because of the number, we lose that respect. Mm-hmm. What are your thoughts on that?
Yes. So there is a foundational respect for anyone that wears the white coat. Mm-hmm. If you are outstanding world leader, or dare I say the last place when you graduate, they still call you doctor, a person that you'd be like, no.
They do. No. And then
whatever
they send
it is.
You, then they send you to the VA.
But they have this foundational education that rises them above us.
Right,
in that nature, not as a person, but as a profession, right?
Mm-hmm.
Again, you have to have that foundational expertise from someone, whether it's a football coach or any profession. You have to respect what they have. Now, if I can help with that, awesome. If I can learn from that, please teach me every day, right? And if we're status quo with each other, great. I've actually gone to physicians and ask them questions like, hey, what don't you like about product X? Because my company tells me it's the best ever. It matters what they think. Mm. Because if I don't think like they do, why am I here?
Mm.
Right? You have to show that respect to them, right? They're the band leader. I'm just the drummer in the back or whatever you're doing. But you have to show that respect, number one, because remember my first three words, they don't want you here. They don't need you here. Now go create a value. And when they go, oh, this guy really seems to want to learn.
Mm, that's a value.
I have never in 46 mm-hmm. years had a doctor say, I'm not telling you.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-mm.
They're mm-hmm. smart people. They want to tell everything to know. Whether they're great or terrible, what they do, it doesn't matter.
Do you think all of them are like closet teachers?
No, some people hate teaching. Some people love teaching, right?
Mm-hmm.
I want to find the 75% guy. Likes to tell you what he does, why he does it. But that's it. That's good enough. I don't have to have an hour-long discussion with them. I have to pick their brain and take pieces, parts to make my puzzle.
Mm-hmm. Well, and it seems like that's really helped you a ton, too, with not alienating anybody, but also keeping those, like, that slow burn account, right? Like, oh, I'll get you eventually.
All day, right? It's a war, not a battle.
Yep.
Right. And to that point, that's daily learning, moving forward up. I'm stepping up steps, not falling down them.
Mm.
Right. And trust me, everyone will fall down one or two. You just want to fall down 20.
Yeah.
Right. A little slip and say, I'm okay.
Yeah.
Let's move forward again. Right. And that's a life lesson for everybody, no matter what you're doing. But the idea is to always move forward despite small setbacks and somehow think about stuff before you have a huge setback, right? Just right. Nobody jumps up a hill fast, but you slowly take your time. You get there. Same idea with whatever you're doing in life is my two cents, right?
Yeah.
Build. A little dirt. Okay. But keep building.
Yeah. We got a lot of people out in our universe. We call them unis, Mark. So there's a lot of unis that they actually know exactly what we're talking about. And there's some that, you know, they work at the plant, right? Or they're selling copiers. Tell us about how sort of the game has changed. Like, so what was it like coming into industry then compared to now? And, you know, it's kind of a long question, but what were some of the perks that, you know, because a lot of people, when I first got into the industry, they were like, oh my God, you work from home? Oh my God, you got a company car and you kind of make your own schedule. Talk to us about what that transition was like for you back then, and then how you've kind of seen, the perks and all the different things change over the years in our industry.
Sure, sure. So when I started, people were just a rep.
Mm-hmm.
Where I worked, we used to joke, you're just a tech or you're just a nurse. Mm-hmm. Joking with each other, obviously, not putting each other down, but the understanding of there's a fine line that you mm-hmm. can't cross.
Yep.
Right? And as a rep, that line is about as big as the China Wall, right? Mm-hmm. You cannot do certain things. But it goes back to understanding the value you need to create. So my big value is education, because in the cardiology world, why is the right coronary dominant?
Mm.
Well, it's bigger. That, size has nothing to do with it, although generally it does. But the reason why it's dominant is not because how big it is, but where it goes,
right,
et cetera, et cetera. And people... The thing that really ate at me is when you're taught wrong, it just builds on wrong.
Right.
And people don't know. They just think they know and they spurt something out.
It's a bad foundation.
All day. So I wanted to get to that foundation, because remember, we, wherever you're at, are only as good as our lowest common denominator.
Uh-huh.
My goal is to bring everybody up some, right? Mm-hmm. Bring the foundation up. So that being said, my transition came. I found the value that the nurses and techs in the lab needed. Mm-hmm. Again, we can train a monkey to go down the hall, grab a box or a product and bring it back for the doctor to use. That's easy to do. But I want you to understand what's in the box, what it does, right. Why they want a specific product, mine or not, doesn't matter. And then that's my fight with the doctor, not the staff.
Right.
Okay, mine. And he comes back because I want that. Who told you to get that? Oh, now what? Mm-hmm. Now you just went down a few steps. Right.
Yep.
So I found that education, foundational education for nurses and techs in the lab was my bailiwick, if you will.
Mm.
The year I was clinical of the year, I did over 1,100 CEUs.
That's a lot. What's a CEU?
Now, some of this was a big seminar where I did 10 CEUs to 50 people.
Break down a CEU for our listeners, Mark.
So a CEU is usually a 1 hour credit, right? Mm-hmm. As a nurse or a tech, you need X CEUs per biennium to make sure that you're trying to up yourself and have continuing education. So it's a continuing education, if you will, or CMEs for physicians.
Mm-hmm.
It's an accreditation that you're continuing to learn.
And you were teaching them.
I was teaching the nurses and techs. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, our company, Our continuing education units were approved for both nurses and techs.
That's great.
So our company did the homework to say, let's train everybody.
So that helped you to go deep and wide in those accounts.
To the point where I walk in and I would, you know, cause I had a whole state and they're like, hey, you're here today. What are you going to teach us? That was my approach when they walked in. Mm. I was like, wow, what do you want to learn? And I had all my equipment ready to go, et cetera. Right. But it was easy to, once I created it, they feed me more kind of idea. They wanted more. And the physicians appreciated it. The cath lab managers appreciated it because I had a value that my competitors weren't doing.
Mm-hmm.
So I found my niche.
Yeah.
Niche, whatever you want to call it. To make mm-hmm. myself different than the other companies. Mm. I provided a value they didn't.
What was it like? Thank you for that. What was it like? Talk to us about the things you could do with doctors back then that we can't do now. Like we got the Sunshine Act and all of this stuff. Well, it kind of was the wild, wild west back then. Give us a little bit of insight into that.
It was. So I fortunately or unfortunately came in right at the end of the old days where you take somebody on a trip, take them to a baseball game. So
golf.
Long story short, entertainment was okay.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And then AdvaMed was developed, came in, said, wait a minute, your cardiologist doesn't need to go on an elk hunt or some extravagant thing that has nothing to do with medicine.
Right.
So they're like, you know what? Enough of this buying the business, not happening.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I mean, I've heard crazy stories. I have I can probably tell you I have never entertained a physician on just free money time.
Outside of steak and wine, right? You know what I mean?
Correct. And educational dinner, right?
Because, uh-huh.
And it was my job, in my mind, to talk to them about medicine. Mm-hmm. Not the whole time. Kids, whatever you talk about. But I had an agenda that by the end of the night, I was going to find out what he does, why he does it, what he likes and doesn't like.
Mm-hmm.
And I've asked this to multiple physicians. By the way, what's your expectation of a rep? Mm. What do you want from a rep? Sometimes it's just networking.
You're dropping heat. So it outside of your product, you're asking them like what's important to them and how do they want to communicate?
Well, and just go the opposite. I have product X, right? If they don't have it available or don't like it, what now?
Mm-hmm.
Hey, doc, you like product X? Nope. Don't have it here.
Or if they didn't like your predecessor,
mm-hmm.
who's there before you.
Trust me, we've had multiple industry nightmares,
mm-hmm.
right? And one was the first drug-eluting stent came out, right? They charge $3,400, over $3,000 a piece. Highway robbery. Mm-hmm. Whatever it was, you want it, you pay for it. Mm-hmm. Right? And you create enemies. Or I walked into accounts where somebody didn't do the right thing for the account. They're like, yeah, we hate your company. I'm like, great. I'm new. I'm different.
Mm-hmm.
I ask her one thing, two things. Let me phrase it. Number one, let's wipe the slate clean. And let me do my job. And by the way, if in the first 30 days you don't like what I'm doing, I give. You win. Mm-hmm. But I ask for the opportunity to prove that I will be relevant and offer them a value. That's mm-hmm. my job. Right?
It's interesting you say that because that's like really drawing a line in the sand, right? It's
all day.
It's like when people say, hey, you know, 30-day money back guarantee. You don't like it. And you kind of put your back to the wall and the wind at your face and said, I'm going to walk into this adversity and I'm going to say, if you don't like what I'm doing after 30 days or so, cool. Why do you think a lot of people won't do that?
I think number one, they're not confident in their story.
Yeah.
I say story. That doesn't mean it's a falsehood, right? But they're not confident in their ability to take messaging forward. And maybe they're just not sure how to offer that value. And this might be one of the most important things I say today in my mind or relevant things. If you're not succeeding, somebody is in your company. Mm-hmm. Somebody is. And if you don't pick up a phone and call and say, hey, can you help me do A or B?
Uh-huh.
Or we've had the conversations. I'm about to jump off the ledge. I'm done. Hold on. Take a breath. Do, you know, whatever, right? Mm-hmm. But if you don't reach outside for resources, outside your office, now maybe it's your company, maybe it's an old friend, maybe it's somebody who's not even in the business.
Right.
Whatever it is. So there's three layers here, but number one is your passion. Mm-hmm. Number two, to build on your passion is to ask for help.
Yep.
That doesn't mean you're weak. That doesn't mean you're failing. That means I just need to step up because I'm trying to go up those steps. I got to find something to make me get up those steps one at a time or 10 at a time. I don't care. Go up.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't reach out somewhere to be better, then this sounds crude, but you deserve to stay where you're at.
I hope people are listening.
If you're happy with that, then stay where you're at.
And most people
tend to reach out.
They tend not to ask for help because they don't want to look. They want to look like they're rock stars or
insecurity.
Or, you know, and it's, we talk about this and, you know, we talk about this all the time. And when people have imposter syndrome, like,
sure.
Oh, I'm not supposed to be here. So I definitely don't want to ask questions to make people think I shouldn't be here.
Right.
It's so funny because you mentioned that. And I can't tell you hundreds of people that said, hey, can you get me a job? I want to be a rep. In the back of my mind, I'm like, you don't even want to go set up a table
mm-hmm.
for the next case?
But yeah.
You want to be a rep? You have negative 12 work ethic.
Right? Negative 12.
Right?
Yeah.
You're never going to, you will never make it in business because you have no drive. You don't have a passion. And the people who have that passion in whatever industry, they blow up. You see them instantly. Yep. Like, oh, you got it. You, and I joke because I look at people, I go, you get it.
Let's dig into that a little deeper. One of the things that I've heard you talk about and has really led you up the path is the art. And this is a two-part question, is the art of anticipation. Now, to me, that's a deep squeaky wheel, because to me, you can over anticipate and now you're just assuming. So talk to me about the importance of anticipation.
Yeah, I think that starts with ground zero to understand what you're doing and why they do it.
Mm-hmm.
And then you're like, oh, I know what you're going to do because I've learned what you do in step one.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And then step two comes, and then there's a step three that I haven't found out about. So I need to ask. Mm-hmm. Oh, wait, I'm up to step seven now. Great. Let's go. Right. To me, that's part of my job, to learn what Stanford likes to do something mm-hmm. in steps 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Okay. If I don't understand all those five, again, understanding what is easy, but asking why you do 3 and 4 in that order, once I understand it, it's like, I'm on the same, hey, we talk, we're on the same page. I get what you like and why you like it.
Right.
And there's two things. I don't care what you like, but I want to know why you like it.
Right.
Now it just sinks. It's like a sponge sucking up the water. I'm like, got it. And you know who's awesome at that? Fellows.
Mm.
Fellows, wherever the fellows are, whatever they're doing, doesn't matter. They're just like a sponge. They soak up everything. Because I think I made strides with fellowships because I don't tell them what, I tell them why. I tell them what and why. Or as we've always said, I teach them features and then the benefits of that. Here's the features. Here's how to apply them,
mm-hmm.
which is killer. That's exactly what they want to know.
So before I get into the second part, let's break down those role names. Like, what's a fellow? What's a resident? Talk to me real quick about what those are.
So residence is a bottom level learner to move forward. So you get into med school, then you become a resident and you're looking to see, do I want to do cardiology or brains or toes or what do I want to do with my medical degree, right? To be a doctor, but you need to move forward. There's additional learning, right?
Yep.
So there's residency, then there's fellowships. And fellowships vary on whatever you're doing, but cardiology has a 4-year fellowship, right? Where you learn echo and nuclear and EP and different, branches of cardiology in general. And then you can pick because it was so diversified, but now it's separate where you're either an EP doctor, electrophysiology, pacemakers, et cetera, electrical versus plumbing.
Right?
Versus a plumbing artery stents, et cetera, versus structural, meaning
mm-hmm.
put in mitral clips and or percutaneous valves. And so that's structural, right?
Okay.
So those are different specialties that you have to choose now over your 3 to 4 year fellowship. And you choose from residency to fellowship. The first 2 years you get, okay, I'm going to move to this one. Great. And by the time you finish your third and or fourth year fellowship, you've really become specialized in whatever that is you want to do. Again, ortho, neuro, whatever your branches that you like. So it's just a step up, if you will, the steps again towards learning expertise in your specific field.
Got it. So let's go back to that anticipation thing real quick.
Yeah.
I feel like, and you tell me your thoughts on it, I feel like the art of anticipation has been lost on today's generation. Is that something that, have you noticed that? Do you agree with that? Yeah.
Absolutely. And again, I think it comes down to interest. Passion is more than interest, right? And those people you see in the cath lab or surgery or whatever your specialty is, you see them be involved with what's what. And I joke with this. Every cath lab has these people. Tell me more. I want to understand. You're like, you got it. Other mm-hmm. people are like, oh, this is pretty good. And I know he likes this, so I'll go get that. And other people are like, I leave in 20 minutes.
Right.
Don't care. Right. I want to take the I leave in 20 minutes guy and make him go like, oh, that's kind of interesting. And try to help them understand why. The passionate person, I'll put them to the fellows or the physician to understand they want that level. They've already exceeded everything. Now, teach me more kind of idea. Mm-hmm. Right. So again, to my point, I want to bring the lowest common denominator up. Right. So everybody in the lab has an interest versus I don't care. If you don't care, why are you here? Go sweep a floor. They'll pay you. Mm-hmm. You don't care. Right.
Yep.
God forbid you work on my mom. Now let's right. really turn up the dial, right?
That's Chris's yeah. line.
And they're going to take care of me one day.
Yeah.
Damn well, better know what you're doing.
Well, I don't like a lot of people put the knife on me, but I would allow Mark to in his garage.
In a second.
Like that's in a second. I will go to a major hospital and I would look at them sideways, but mm-hmm. I'd show up in Cleveland and let him have his way with me, if you will.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah,
I knew that. I knew that I was going to get you, Mark. Great lead-in questions, Alexei. I got a two-parter. So talk to us, because a lot of people might look at it like, "Well, fellows, they're not doing anything for me now, right? Why are the fellows for the unis out there? Tell us why the fellows are so important."
Mm-hmm.
So understand their journey, right? Mm-hmm. High school, college, med school, mm-hmm. residency, fellowship, whatever, right? So if they're a fellowship and they don't matter to the unis, whether you're 20, 30, 50, 60, they have two or three more years of learning, and then mm-hmm. they will be the man or the lady mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. in charge. If they didn't learn well, and to your point, you walk in the hospital, you're like, now what? Who are you? How seasoned are you? We don't have that opportunity. Just take care of me because I'm in trouble. What's going on? Fix me. That's why we have the people we do, and the fellows to me are the next gen, right? And they've been next gen for 100 years. Mm-hmm. Who's coming next? Who's coming next? And I had the pleasure of training a lot of fellows in my time frame. And if you know me well, I have a picture, a folder on my phone of probably 65 fellows that I see at meetings. Hey, big hug and everything. People are like, you know him? God, he runs our lab. He's really, I'm like, he's nothing. Mm-hmm. Not to downplay with their job role.
Right.
We were buds a long time ago, and that bud continues on because I show him respect. I've worked with him day one. You know, I laugh about it, but I see people like I was at this past weekend. I was at a big course teaching 60 physicians, and they worked at X hospital. Oh, I said, isn't that where Dr. Smith is? They're like, yeah, you know him. I said, I trained him as a fellow. They're like, wait, you're Mark? I'm like, yeah.
Mark?
He loves you. He talks about you all the time, this and that. But you know what? It's heartwarming. It's very fulfilling because I know I made a difference.
Yeah. And you planted the seed, right? So you planted the seed. Now these physicians, because I almost look at you like an ambassador, and that's how you've been used sort of the last 8 years or so that I've known you, is that when there is a hostage situation or there is major headbutting, they call you in and they're like, Houston, we have a problem. Can you call the ambassador?
You know, we've all been somewhere where they say, let me get somebody else from the inside.
Mm-hmm.
Let me call my boss or mm-hmm. whatever, right? I joke, I'm like, bring in the lefty, thinking baseball terms.
Right.
Right? I feel like that lefty, and I don't feel like it boastfully, like I know everything, because I might come across experienced, mm-hmm. but I'd never want to be pompous. And if I am to anyone listening, my sincere apologies. That's not me. I'm just seasoned and
nobody
done a lot of stuff
sees
a long
you
time.
Like that. No. Nobody sees you like that.
But I've learned, right? And if I can't convey what I've learned to people, then I've learned it for nothing.
Mm-hmm.
I'm learning it for nothing. I can pat myself on the back all day, but that doesn't help anybody else.
Yeah. So spend time with those fellows. If unis out there, they might not be paying you dividends today, but if you are trying to have a long standing career and be able to, and again, it doesn't matter where you're housed today, right? It doesn't matter what letters you wear on your scrubs today, those relationships span across organizations.
Yep.
You know,
to that point, Chris, I was down in North Carolina. I went to travel with somebody for a couple of days, walked in the lab, and the doc was getting ready to scrub. And he looked around and goes, "Oh my God, the legend is here. Blah, blah, blah." I'm like, "Oh boy, here we go." He stopped, came over, gave me a hug, and the staff's like, "Who is this guy?" "You guys remember me telling you about this guy? Blah, blah, blah. That's him." They're like, "Oh, you got to teach us what you taught him." Okay. Mm-hmm. But those efforts from day one,
right?
People don't forget it. Now, if you're a jerk,
no, they'll remember that.
They don't forget it.
No.
But if you're great, they don't forget it either, right?
Yeah.
So why wouldn't you spread your wealth, right? It's really important.
Second part of that question. How has yesterday's position changed to today's position? You've seen it a long way, and maybe there are changes, maybe there aren't, but what are the differences that you've seen over the last 46 years and how our physicians and customers tend to act and treat us? What have you seen?
So if you remember, physicians are an evidence-based medicine society.
Oh,
we have to prove it works before we use it.
Yep.
It's simple, simple idea, right? The data's out there, et cetera, et cetera. We have old school physicians who are like, "I don't need that." Imaging's a big deal in cardiology now, right? If you have the ability to image it, why wouldn't you, right? And there's data now that shows imaging's much better, et cetera, whatever mode you like to use. Old school physicians are like, "I've been doing this for 40 years. Don't need it." When we have young 15 years out of fellowship physicians going, "I thought I was pretty good until I looked at my imaging data and shows 3/4 of the time I'll make a change based on imaging versus just looking at the angiogram, let's say." That's eye-opening. And these are world-class superior operators they built. I thought I had to go back to cardiology school because I don't know how to read an angiogram. Listen, it's quick, it's cheap, it's easy. It's not perfect. Imaging adds another tool. Not you can just image if you want, but the point is newer, open-minded physicians are taught, use all your tools, right? Back in the day, we didn't have all those tools, so they didn't need them, right? Just like if you want to argue that I don't need drug-eluting stents, bare metals just fine, you live under a rock. The data is so overwhelming of A versus B that if you don't use A, it's almost a malpractice nowadays,
right?
And I don't want the legal mumbo-jumbo, but the idea is if A is better than B, you should use A. And if you're not open to looking at it and understanding why, then you're not a true, you know, believer in the art of data makes better outcomes.
Well said.
That's what I see, right? Let me rephrase that. Most physicians adapt and move on to better practice, right? Medical practice, kind of ironic.
Yeah.
But they move on to better methodologies and outcomes, procedures, et cetera. Versus just sticking old school, right? Some old school stuff is what it is. But if you don't adapt, right? What's the oxymoron? Change is constant. It's the same in cardiology. We find better, newer ways to make better outcomes. And as much as you forget about all this jibber jabber, it's about the patient on the table first. We can't forget that.
Do you think it's harder or easier now to become a successful physician? Like somebody joined, you know, 6-7 years ago and they're about to, you know, finish their residency. Do you think that's easier to do today or harder, and why?
I think the honest answer is it depends where you go to school.
Okay.
Unfortunately, good and bad. I'm not here to talk up and down about anything, but I see larger academia places that put out outstanding fellows. Almost better than half the attendings out there. Because they're taught, look at every option, understand why, right? We came to be, you know, experienced, seasoned operators with great outcomes because we look back and learn what to do, what to not do. And there's places where fellows don't do anything for the first year. You're not doing this procedure.
All right.
Stand and watch. But as you all know, see one, do one, teach one. Unless you get your hands on something, right? I'm like, so go Nolan Ryan, old fastball pitcher, go stand in the box and just swing. My guess, you're going to swing 100 times and not hit one. Because guess what? You didn't get the experience.
Right.
So to answer your question, I think it depends where you go, but it's really about the hands-on experience.
Yeah.
Right? We have to let fellows fail to some small, safe degree. Right? Learn. Not unsafe. I'm not, don't misunderstand me. Right. You have to learn the safe way to do things, and that's not going to work. Stop right there. See this, do A, not B, and move forward, right?
Because if not, how are you ever going to take the training wheels off?
All day. All day. You should be doing procedures or looking, wondering, asking. And by the way, ask why. I've never heard an attending tell a fellow, I'm not telling you. Right? My job is to teach you to make you better.
Yeah.
So you would say that if what I'm hearing you say, and maybe I'm hearing you wrong, though, is it's just as that pathway out of residency and, or, you know, is just as glamorous as it used to be if you're doing it right?
I say yes. And I say the margin of error is smaller. Because you need to be more defined in what your initial or your end job role is, right? You want to do cardiology. Yes. You want to do structural or, you know, vascular, structural or EP. Or just read echoes. Just read echoes. Okay. You know, we have non-interventional people that like what they do. You have to pick your, you know, what your passion is. And then you have to never stop asking questions.
That leads into my next question. You've been in the game for a while. And like we said, it's easy. A lot of people don't understand what got you here won't get you there. Right. And so people get a role, they get a role outside of the lab, they get a, you know, a clinical role, they get a territory manager role, they get an RD role, all of these things. And people think that they made it. You obviously didn't subscribe to that. Talk to the unis out there about how, what you did to stay abreast of technology changes, product knowledge. How did you keep yourself on the cutting edge? Based upon all the changes that have been made over the last 46 years.
Yeah. So data with the change from balloons only for angioplasty, a balloon, to a drug, a bare metal stent, to a drug-eluting stent, to imaging, right? When I first started, we put in stents. We would image every case. And we, the industry, learned that 8 atmospheres wasn't enough pressure. 24 atmospheres was too much pressure. 14 is about right as long as you undersize and expand a little more. I mean, little idiosyncrasies that made a big difference along the road. You have to learn those, put them in your memory banks, and apply those changes moving forward, right? So you have to be open to new technologies. Sorry, mastering the first technology, then adding on to that with whatever the new technology was and understand it. For me, the three things I tried to do was look at the data, what supports what, and whether the data is relevant or not. And if you're not sure, ask your doctor, hey, what'd you think about XYZ trial? I didn't see that. Oh, I'd love to get your opinion. Maybe come back to you in a week and understand because, you know, what you see might be different than what I see.
Yeah.
And the other thing I tell people is this. If there's data that says mine is the best ever, right? Is it real? Right. So the three things I tell people, is it real? Is it achievable? Is it repeatable? If it's not, throw it away. Right. It's not going to be something you can carry on. But most importantly, understand the data, how it applies, and then who's going to apply it. All right.
Cause this guy is Oscar Gold today, Alexei. He's Oscar Gold.
Well, we will be bringing you back.
I'll tell you one
Mark.
More thing real quick here. There's two different things in data. Anybody's data, doesn't matter. There's a registry and there's head-to-head randomized stuff, right? Mm. Registries are like, okay, Chris Sanford runs a 100-yard dash, and the fastest he got was 9.7, but he also had a 10.1 and a 10.6. Mm. But he's the fastest guy in the room. Did you race anybody else?
Wait,
it's how good does Chris run? By the way, there's nobody else running. You might have field speed or something and beat everybody just because that guy's right behind you and that little oomph gets you there.
Yeah.
Right? But a registry is a one-armed animal. Didn't compare to anything. By the way, Chris, Mark, Alexi, Joe, and Fred are all running 100-yard dash.
Mm-hmm.
Now you put your money where your mouth is because now I have to beat something else.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And people need to understand the data and then how to apply it. And listen, we're not getting into statistics and statisticians and all that mess, but there's proof that A is either equal to, the same, or worse than B.
Mm.
Whatever you're looking at, apply that. And why does it matter?
Wow. Share with us a couple experiences that you've had in your career that have taught you valuable lessons about selling in the med device field.
Mm.
Yeah, I can tell you I made the terrible, terrible mistake of looking at someone's. So back in the day, we used to use drugs to stop the platelets from clicking together, right? Yeah. And my first job out, I sold a device that measured that result. Well, they just re-bolused the patient with the drug instead of measuring how effective the first part of that was.
Mm.
The patient bled out, had to go to surgery, all that stuff. And I'm like, listen, if you just remeasured, by the way, look at the cost associated with that. Mm-hmm. They're like, who are you? And we don't need you here to tell us how bad we did something. Yeah. Size 84, right in my mouth, right? Now, to understand what I was trying to do today, I would tell you a whole different story of understanding how to approach that situation,
mm-hmm.
right? We in the industry tend to knee jerk. I got to get this effect right away because I have so much to tell them. Remember my first words? They don't want you here. They don't need you here.
Mm-hmm.
We hit the value with discussion, not throwing harpoons.
Mm.
Understand what matters to them. Right? So you can't jump in with 2 feet when you can't swim in the pool. You can't do that. Walk in the shallow end. Walk around a little bit. Dunk yourself a little bit. Say, oh, you know what? I think I can swim. And to put that into context, it's ask appropriate questions. Right? Don't just throw stuff out there.
Mm-hmm.
Cause they bounce back and normally hit you right in the forehead. Ask
no,
the right
No showing up and throwing up.
All day long.
Yeah.
I can't think of the last time a doctor called me and said, hey, come help me put a stent tomorrow. Right? Come help me do this, do that. It's all about understanding needs, wants, and the understanding of how I can approach that to be the difference maker or make mm-hmm. them realize that I'm here for the right reasons, not the wrong reasons. By the way, that's called a value.
Yeah. So there are a lot of unis out here who are in their cars.
Mm-hmm.
And they just did exactly what you did. They've been in a lab. Somebody came and saw them and said, come on over to the dark side. They've probably said no. And then finally they got them to come over. What advice can you give to those individuals that are now, you know, in their RAV4 driving across country? You know, trying to go support a case. What advice can you give these newbies?
Before you open your mouth, understand the account and all facets in the account. Physician, inventory, the chief door opener, whoever it is, understand your pathway. Understand the guy who sweeps the floor and the guy who puts in a little brain transmitter and everywhere in between, right? Because they didn't call you to say, we need you here. So now you have to go understand them, pick them, peel the onion, if you will, right? Understand what part of what and then where you can insert yourself in that onion to say, this will help them. Understand what they need. Ask open-ended questions, meaning like, hey, what do you need from me? What do you expect from me? What do you need from me? How can I help your lab be better, or your whatever it is you're doing? How can I help you be better? And they say, well, you can't. There's always a hot button. No one says, oh, by the way, here's our hot button. Work on it.
Yeah.
You have to find that hot button. Now, it might be glaring to you. It might not be glaring to you.
Yeah.
Again, for me, education for the lab was my hot button to start with. And then it caught on and went to fellows, and then it went to attendings. And, hey, do you know this guy over here? Can you get me in touch with him? But, you know, and now I was a resource for other people for what they need, not what I need. But by the way, helping you is my need. And I found it.
Yeah.
So it's really important to lay all the cards out and understand how you're going to play the hand.
Yeah.
By the way, that changes every person you talk to, not just every account, every person in that account. Cause I'm the chief tech. I've been here 30 years. I don't need you. That guy would get praise all day long. Talk to me. What do you know? What do you like to do? Have you ever? Well, teach me how. What do you like? What do you? All of a sudden, we're talking on the same level. Mm-hmm. I'm not talking down to him, because I'm a rep. Doesn't make me any better than anybody in the lab, right? Just making a different approach.
Yeah.
My values for them might be different than I was the guy in the lab all day.
Yeah.
One more, Alexei, and we can start to transition.
Yeah, absolutely.
Talk to us about a scenario or client relationship in your career that's had a lasting impact on you.
So I have a physician about an hour from Cleveland, and I don't know who this is going to go to, but the physician is a 7 out of a 10
okay.
in his specialty.
Mm-hmm.
And he's asked multiple times to be taken somewhere and or bring somebody in to help him, et cetera, et cetera. I'd been out of true lab work, if you will, for about 7 mm-hmm. years now, haven't been in lab. He still calls me monthly to come do specific cases.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, he's tough too. It's not just hey, what's going on? How are you? No, he's tough. It was a tough lab, and I earned my stripes by what can I do for you? I'll get you in touch with him and let's take you here and let's do it right. Offering the values that he needed. That he asked me for. Now, I didn't ask him. He asked me for. So I craved that value. And it's been lasting ever since. And I can tell you multiple fellows along the same line about what I taught them. And, oh my gosh, 4 or 5 years ago from a fellow that trained in 2010, I taught him guide wires back in the day. Mm-hmm. We were at a funeral, God forbid, a couple of years ago, came up from a different city. Because there was a respected physician that had passed and his wife was there. She goes, hey, I want to introduce you. This is Mark. Remember the guy I told you? This guy's a guide wire guru, taught me everything I know about wires. Right? I'm like, well, he speaks very highly of me, but you know, he's a great student. So it worked great and whatever. Thank you very much. Very, you know, humble about it all, but those kind of things. Right. And I have 75 of those with fellows because I gave them the value they needed.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And it just continues. I text them weekly to multiple. How you doing? What's going on? You know, those kind of things.
Let's talk about the flip side,
because
a lot of people look at our industry and they're just like, oh my God, I would love to be there. And it's just all glitz and glamour. Talk to us about how you've been able to maintain your motivation and sense of resilience through the tough times.
Yeah, I can tell you, I've worked hard every year. I didn't take a year off, you know, and clinical. So in my 14 years in the true field, I was clinical of the year 4 times. I was rep of the year 1 time in a year and a half that I was a rep, if you will, in the field. Mm-hmm. But that always drove me to learn to overachieve my expectations, because anything less than that, again, for me was not okay. Mm-hmm. Right. And I joke now, people are like, you're retired. I said, but I'm still working a bit because as right or wrong as it is, it's in me.
Mm-hmm.
It's in me. I've lived it for a long time. It's what I do. Okay. And in all fairness to anyone else, I have a whole lot of knowledge. Mm-hmm. I'm not the best ever. Don't misunderstand me, but I have a lot of stuff that can help others be better. And if I go to my 6-foot hole tomorrow, if I don't spread that for somebody somewhere, then it's a waste.
Right.
I got better and that's great for me. But what about those people who are going to take care of me one day?
Mm-hmm.
Have to make them better.
What are you, and I don't want to start the faucet here, but, what are you most proud of looking back at your career?
Ooh, good question. Not getting thrown out of a lab. No, that was,
hey, that's huge.
Hey. Bravo, sir.
You always have a shot.
Not a lot of people that can say that.
Yeah. No, I think, you know what? I think I'm most proud of two things. Mm-hmm. Physician respect.
Right.
Mm. And that's not free.
No.
Mm-hmm. That's a hard-earned dollar right there. Right?
Mm-hmm.
But them knowing Mark, then calling Mark is just very gratifying.
Yeah.
I have to tell you, it's very rewarding because I sent a little form letter on retirement to 40 doctors.
Mm-hmm.
Mm.
35 responded with not one line, but 3, 4, or 10.
Wow.
And you know what? That makes you sit back and go, wow, I guess I did it right. Because you're never sure. You think you are.
Oh, you did. Yeah,
and,
absolutely.
But you know what I'm saying? You move forward and you're like, I wonder what I left back there. But
right.
So. Number one, you think you did it right, and to know you did it right is great, but you always have to look back. And then the second thing I did is I've helped multiple people, which in turn helped multiple patients.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I'd like to think I contributed to the game.
Yep.
Patient care first, then making people better that made patient care better. And I pushed that button a bit, and that's why I did what I did. So I think I've accomplished that in looking back. Patients did better because of something I might have done.
Yeah. Well said. Well said. All right. Well, let's shift gears a little bit. Because I've known you for a hot second or two.
Yep.
Talk to me about some of your hobbies. I know I'm leading you in a direction, but what's one of your kind of, you can't even sit at a table without doing this.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm a drummer. I that's my little habit. My hobby now is, I'm a drummer in rock and roll band at 65 years old. And ironically, the lead guitarist I graduated high school with in 1977.
Yeah.
So we're still buddies and, you know, so that's my hobby. I love music. It came from Grandpa, who was a musician for 35 years, had a band that played all the time with no microphones, by the way.
Oh, so, that's, I like that.
It's pretty hip. It was neat to do. So very grateful for what he gave me, taught me, et cetera. So that's one of my hobbies. As you know, I have 5 grandkids, 13 to 5. They are entertainment. If you don't have grandchildren, it is a life of its own. It's awesome. So I'm a grandpa to the point of I'm a wrestling coach with the 6th grade and under kids. So I still roll on the mat with them trying to teach them some basic stuff that, again, to make them better kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And that brings me back to one statement that I don't think I've said, but people will have a success and call me and go, oh, my gosh, thank you so much for what you did, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, hold on. Understand, when you win, I win.
Mm-hmm.
But you, when you fail, we all fail.
Mm.
So you have to win and take your wins by all means and just say, hey, thanks. Great. I did better. It's about you, not me. Cause when I give you that and you move forward with it, that's killer stuff.
I agree with that completely.
So how are you filling up your free time now? Are you getting up and still going into the office at the same time? Like I need to know.
I'm kind of stuck because my company computer's dead in the water. I try to open it up. It says your account has been locked.
How many times have you ever owned your own laptop, your own like Mark owned computer?
Yeah. I have a laptop and you know, all those things, but yeah. So I don't have access to any of that. And people still call me, ask me questions. Mm-hmm. And listen, I have no problem with that. I gladly answer anybody's question anytime.
So you're going to move into consulting now.
I'm going to move into consulting. I have to wait another week. It'll be my 30 days posted. You know, I'm looking forward to it because, again, that passion's in me. I want to make mm-hmm. people better, mm-hmm. right? And I have to get rid of some of this stuff and teach it to other people and or offer help and whatever it is. So, yeah, I'll do consulting. And, again, I think the plan is to do 4 or 5 larger conferences this year for me and then anything else somebody needs. And to that point, I think my most effective thing is to travel with Chris Stanford or somebody and say, what are you doing? Mm-hmm. How can we make you better?
Mm-hmm.
Right. And by the way, if that doesn't work, you should get rid of me today on the spot.
Yep.
Because I know what they don't know. And I just have to show them, here's the feature, make it the benefit and apply it moving forward. Everybody wins.
That's awesome.
I love that.
That is.
And
awesome.
By the way, I'll take care of my yard without trying to run myself over with my mouth.
I was gonna leave the lawnmower out of this story, but you brought it up.
That grass, man. That grass. And anytime Mark sees the OJs or Billy Ocean, he takes a picture and sends it to me.
All day.
He sends it.
All
the Caribbean
day.
Queen, baby.
Caribbean OJs. Good stuff. Good stuff.
Man, this we're definitely gonna have to have Mark back.
Oh yeah, yeah. This is going to be a seven parter.
I mean, you are just such a natural, and you know you're not a newbie to podcasts anyway.
I have time.
You do. You do have plenty of time. Okay. Before we transition into a couple of things, Alexa has.
Yeah.
For people that don't know you, you remind me of you don't remind me of my grandfather, but my grandfather had endless jokes. And that's one thing about you. So, is there a joke that you can share with the uni? And this is adult. So
I've gotten better at grandpa jokes.
I can tell you. I've gotten much better at grandpa jokes.
Okay.
Did I tell you about my grandfather who was a dyslexic baker in the army?
No.
He always came up, one's a glazer. come on, you know. There's always something going on.
That's how quick he is.
Always something.
That's how quick he is.
I go by sports or dates or holidays, you know, whatever it is. But.
Exactly.
Yeah. Just no jokes about penguins and we'll be okay.
You want to do some this or that, or what are we doing, Alexa?
Let's do a little pop culture. So we have a thing. We got a little pop goes the weasel.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what's something that's current, fresh, maybe a new song, a new artist, a TV show, a movie that you're like, man, that's just grabbed me and give me the goosebumps.
So it's interesting that the older I get, the older I become.
Mm-hmm.
Old school music to me, I'm a 60s, mm-hmm. 70s music guy.
Sure.
Yeah.
The new music nowadays, there's a few things that, that's pretty good. No, like a band Fits in the Tantrums.
Okay.
I've heard them a little bit and I'm like, mm-hmm. you know, those are pretty good songs. Now they might be 4, 6, 8 years old, the songs, but I'm just coming around to hearing them now.
That's brand new to you.
Right.
I'm old school guy. I appreciate the music, but I I'd rather pop on some old Motown or something that you're just used to. You're going 70 miles an hour down the freeway, windows open in the summertime, cracking the tunes, just enjoying life.
It gets in your soul. Right.
It's in there, you know, and so those kind of things, TV shows, I don't sit in front of the TV a bunch watching shows.
I didn't think so.
I don't. I mean, I could.
Uh-huh.
Now I can tell you it's 7 inches of snow melting outside today. It's going to be 40 in Cleveland. Guess what? My garage floor will be spotless. I'm going to go wash my garage floor.
Now a brand new garage floor.
Brand new garage floor. I'm way too type A, but you know what? It's 45 out. I'm going to go wash 2 cars.
Mm-hmm. Heat wave.
Garage floor.
That is a heat wave.
It is a heat wave in Cleveland.
How about
Absolutely.
Those Cleveland Browns?
It doesn't matter. The Buckeyes are on top, bro.
You are correct.
Just saying.
You
Michigan
are
poked
correct.
Him right in the eye, and they said,
You know what? In a weird way, I was kind of happy for him. They were just on Ryan Day's ass. I was happy he got it. Because to do all that winning and to have – still a target on your back. It's hard to win the national championship. Oh. I'm like, geez. And people are, you don't win it. You get close and people are like, hey, you're fired. I'm like, what?
Well, the interesting question going around Ohio State Buckeye world is, lose to Michigan or get a national championship.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
They're split.
They're split. And they're trying, and Michigan's trying to say that they're still the champion because you Ohio State lost to them, which is just,
it's okay.
Insane.
Our trophy's a little bigger.
It is.
It is what it is. You know,
it is.
Yeah.
It really is.
It's an
interesting
world there. What's, you know, what makes it go around, but
what about you, yeah. Chris? You got anything new you want to, that you've been jazzed up about?
Yeah, there's a new show.
Don't steal my show.
It's called Paradise.
Oh, okay, cool. I haven't heard
about
this one.
And for the unis out there, I'm not gonna steal the thunder, but it's there's a Secret Service agent, and he goes in, and something's happened to the president. And
nice.
That's where I'll leave it. But there are some twists and turns that you just would not believe, and I'm like, okay, this is a classic whodunit. You know, you think this person is bad, then not, then they are. So, yeah.
What streaming platform is that on?
Hulu, Disney, and Paramount. Okay.
Cool.
Yeah.
So to your point, Chris, I've seen a few of those things on TV that I want to watch. Yeah. But we just converted to streaming 3 months ago, so that's how.
And you don't have a DVR anymore?
What are you on now? You still don't have a big laser disc in the living room?
I have the betas, yeah. I have the big betas.
His VCR wore out.
No, but I tell you, the one thing I'm going to do with my time is I'm a James Patterson fan when I read.
Oh yeah.
So I like the murder mystery stuff.
Yeah.
And my wife tapes, what is it, Phenomenon?
Yeah. Oh, I heard about that. Yeah.
With this girl who gets this crazy things on crimes.
Right.
And the other thing we watch occasionally is Found or Lost or where this guy trails back and finds people.
Oh, gosh, I don't know. That sounds cool.
We'll have to look that one up.
It's a weekly show.
I think you would like Landman. I think
love Landman.
You would probably love Landman.
Sure. Yeah. Billy Bob Thornton is an oil industry worker, like in the oil fields, worker.
Rough around the edges.
Yeah.
Tough as nails.
Really good show.
Dealing with the cartel. So you have to
that'd
that
be good.
On your list.
I like Yellowstone while I was on.
It'll make you feel like Yellowstone a little bit.
Same guy, Taylor Sheridan. Same guy.
Yeah, those things are, that's good stuff.
What about you, Lex?
I just discovered the show. I think it's only about 3 episodes deep right now. I think it's on Max, HBO, whatever. It's called The Pit. But PITT. So it's got the same dude. I think his name is Noah Wiley that was from ER. So it's like ER, but it's based in a specific hospital in Pittsburgh. But with my limited medical industry knowledge, it seems so real. It seems very real. It deals with, like, you know, when they're running cases in an ER, it seems a lot more believable, and it's really kind of showcasing the reality of the suck and the wins and the struggles and the emotions that sometimes get scrubbed clean and stuff.
Yeah, and plus they got him looking rough and scruffy. I'm looking at it now.
Yeah.
Like he hasn't slept. And like all he's doing is coming in there and saving lives.
It's a great show.
I'm gonna have to check that one out.
So I'll tell you, here's an interesting thing is I'm so into the medicine part of things. Like what I want my watches TV shows that are medical.
Mm-hmm.
Out of nowhere, they're taking a pulmonary embolist out in the ER. I'm like, whoa, 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 whoa.
That would never happen.
What the hell is this? She goes, it's a TV show. I said, oh, I agree. Or let's get into OR right away. And they just run upstairs. I'm like,
there's
an OR apparently waiting with people ready to work. I'm like, no.
That's what I like about this show. It seems very real.
So I got to just like, okay, I'll take it with a breath of, you know, grain of salt.
You got to chill back.
Yeah. I got to retire. That's what I got.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Good luck. Good luck.
Yeah. Exactly.
All right. One of our favorite parts of our show is we do a little this or that.
Okay.
And we're going to keep it casual, very casual. Sometimes you get a little dark and deep in the weeds, which I love.
Every time it's just me, he goes super dark.
All right. Let's go.
We're going to keep it real light today. And maybe you're going to be wearing these tomorrow, but are you a flip-flops or are you a Crocs guy?
A Crocs.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Now, do you have the little pins on them? Like, did you bedazzle your
not a chance. Your grandkids bedazzle them for you?
Not a chance.
What about you, Chris?
I guess I would go Crocs. Yeah. But I'm pretty much a slides guy.
Yeah.
I don't really like that thing in between my toes. You know, it's like, this is irritating. And it's funny how many people can wear. Women love to wear them. You know, it's just like they can, and you know, no, it can wear the flat ones. So,
I got an issue that for you. Yeah. Shoes on the beach or barefoot?
Barefoot. Alexei's a shoes on the beach guy.
No, barefoot.
Barefoot, man. Barefoot, and then put the sand right back in your shoes. That's my.
I found a little trick.
What's your trick?
We had a little tip the other day. Wear socks on the beach. The hot sand won't burn your feet till you get to where you're going.
Look at you.
And you won't look weird at all.
Yeah, no. Tall white ones, perfect. Yeah.
with the three stripes.
When you're 65, they'll be like, well, there's that old guy. I'm like,
that's just normal for somebody your age, Mark.
Oh. Yeah. Black socks, black church socks on with Tevas.
Socks and Crocs.
Well, as always, I appreciate you. I'm thankful to have you, Mark, and we look forward to having you again.
Can't wait, man.
Totally my pleasure. Totally my pleasure. I always appreciate shooting the stuff with you guys. It's always good
stuff. You can say shit. You can say shit.
No, stuff.
Okay. He's a grandpa now. Huh?
When did you reform? Okay.
Oh, yeah. No. Oh, trust me. So, I'm going to tell you a little quick funny one. I got a call from my daughter. She goes, Dad, you have to quit telling the kids you're going to knock them out. I got a call from the teacher, says, I can't do that. My grandpa's going to knock me out. So I got a call from home. I'm like, I threaten him. I will knock you out, but it never gets that far. And I would never think of that. And, you know, but it's just the verbiage of grandpa ain't playing.
I was and it's 2025, grandpa.
Yep.
Say it again.
I said, and it's 2025, Grandpa. No knocking out.
My daughter, too, Dad, you can't say that. I said, no, I can say what I want.
Don't tell me what to do.
Exactly. You might not like it, but hey.
Yeah. We'll see you next time, Mark. Thank you.
Awesome. Thanks, guys. Appreciate your time.
Peace.
See you.